Get ready for the Ochelli effect. Ochelli.
And it is the 8th day of July. According to that thing we call a calendar, this is the Ochelli Effect, broadcast live on American Freedom Radio at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Now, normally, I would begin the show with some sort of commentary related to the day's events. We're going to dispense with that on this Friday because I have an extremely special guest. And I'm happy to have him on the show, although if you listen to me over the next couple of minutes, you might not think so. and it's ironic, actually. I'm going to tell you a truth, and I guarantee you that my guest tonight, Oz Fox, has never had an interview begin exactly this way. Here's the deal. If you're a listener of mine, you know that I was a musician. Okay, we've been over all that. You know that I spent a lot of time involved in that culture, not only in a business way, but definitely in a subcultural way. Let's call it that. And there was a heavy metal, hard rock sort of subculture that did exist, okay, that was codified most effectively during the 80s and 90s. That's for sure. This is the time I'm growing up. This is the time teenage Chuck turns around and goes up on a stage and does his thing and tries to present his art to the world. Now, what happened during that time? Okay, an interesting thing started to happen. There was this a sort of emergence of the LA scene in the hard rock heavy metal world. There was this emergence of a sleazy kind of glam rock style of individual that came out, you know, represented by bands like Motley Crue, represented by bands much later like Guns N' Roses, honestly. Sort of sleazy, sort of glammy, all that kind of stuff. And I sort of put up with that. But there was this other part of that, this sort of anti-heavy metal thing in my estimation, and in the estimation of the angry little boys that I definitely did hang out with at the time, because it seemed to pander to the teenage girls out there that wanted to go to the concerts. See, there was almost like a masculine and a feminine version of rock or metal. This is the way that we perceived it at the time. And what they did is they took some artists with talent and some artists without, and they turned around and gave them a lot of hairspray, put some makeup on them and slapped some spandex on them and kind of just shoved them out there. Some of them not very successful, but a whole lot of them being pushed by the corporate musical world on the rest of us and being thrown into your local record store, because yes, they existed back then. I know I'm dating myself, but in the local record store, they started to create a heavy metal bin, and they threw bands like Bon Jovi, who, if you, again, you know me, you know I despise that man, but they threw bands like Bon Jovi into the very same bin with Black Sabbath. They threw Stryper into the very same bin with Slayer. They threw, you get the picture yet? So to me, the angry version of the music was necessary because I was angry and we were all angry and none of us knew what we were angry about. Generation X, what are you going to do? But fact is that that Stryper was an oddity because there was a Christian aspect to it. And to me at that time, I, of course, dismissed it because I thought to myself, this is a gimmick, just like any of these other gimmicks. They have made these guys, and these guys were a lot prettier than anybody like me, that's for sure. I mean, I definitely thought of Lemmy Kilmister as one of my idols because he proved that you didn't have to be pretty to be a rock star. That's for sure. And I love Lemmy. I still do. Miss him. Wish he was still producing music. That's just me. But again, this is how I came to the music initially. Okay, and there was a very dirty aspect to the music back then that I think people don't appreciate now. You know, I definitely wasn't in line with the whole Tipper Gore thing when they were attacking the heavy metal and hard rock genre and trying to attack it as an art form and claim that it was all evil and all terrible and all horrible for the children. And eventually all we got was parental advisory stickers and nonsense in Congress. Frank Zappa testified, and Dee Snider did too. You can find that film on YouTube now. But all of that aside, here's the thing. I unfairly sort of looked at Stryper in that way at that time because maturing as a musician and so on and so forth, I learned a little bit about the technical aspects of what I was hearing. And also, it takes a lot of guts to be in that genre where, believe it or not, I'll give you a very extreme example. The band The Scorpions actually had an album cover that today would be easily considered kiddie porn. Okay, and this was literally their album cover for something called Virgin Killer. This was the kind of stuff that emerged in the music. I mean, Blackie Lawless most famously having, you know, the crotch piece with the saw blade with the blood dripping from it and all of that. And meanwhile, thrown into that mix was a Christian rock band, in my estimation, unfairly called heavy metal. A Christian rock band that actually had a lot of great technical aspects to it. And again, it took a lot of guts to remain in that genre or even remotely related to that genre and stick to your guns morally. You know, so no matter what you may think of a Stryper or what you might have used to think about Stryper, I urge you to reexamine it as I have over the years. And I'll tell you right now, I've got on the show tonight, in my estimation, the most talented member of the band, my opinion, Oz. You don't have to say anything about it. But the most talented member of the band, Oz Fox. A lot of people look at the Sweet Brothers. No, actually, I think Oz is the talent. And that's, again, my opinion. Oz doesn't have to speak to it. But there you go, Oz. I told you it would be an odd introduction. And I, you probably have mixed feelings about what I just said. And, oh, God, what did I just get myself into? But how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing good. It's 106 degrees in Vegas right now, but I'm in a very nice air-conditioned home. So I don't really have to worry too much about that unless I have to go out and check my mail. But very nice introduction, actually, by the way. Very honest. And I like it when people are honest. It just brings more reality to the whole interview, so to speak. I, for one, probably would agree with you on a lot of those points, you know, just because I was more of a metal fan myself. I was a huge Black Sabbath fanatic in my teenage years, and of course that's why my friends started calling me Oz, is because I used to imitate Ozzy Osbourne's voice and play and sing, and it was kind of one of those things where I got the name tagged onto me, and so I just kept the name and shortened it. Instead of everybody would call me Ozzy, I shortened it to Oz, and the rest is history.
And that's extremely cool, because that is the band that I love the most is Black Sabbath, and I followed Ozzy's career. In fact, the only two autographs I ever sought of musicians in my life were Lemmy Kilmister's and Ozzy Osbourne's, and I got them both. I got to meet them both, and I was extremely thrilled with that. They were in fact my two like co-idols, if you will, as a musician. And so that's very cool right there that you were kind of an Ozzy fan, which, hey, you know, a lot of people would say, wait, that doesn't make any sense, Oz. You're in a Christian metal band, and, you know, the Prince of Darkness, that's how you started out, you know, being a fan of this kind of music? What is that all about?
Well, yeah, surprisingly enough, I mean, I guess during my years of being a young guitarist, it was the sound of Tony Iommi's guitars that really, you know, really turned me on. I was just amazed by how huge it sounded. So that's really what drove me to being such a Black Sabbath fan, as well as I thought it was really cool how they had all these wicked riffs, I guess you can call it. Tony being the riff king that he is, really got me going, you know, got me going on wanting to be a metal guitar player. And so that being that kind of a fan of rock and metal, so to speak, honestly, Stryper was just more of I guess I wanted it to be heavier than it was. Let's just put it that way. There was always a desire for that, but it wasn't going to go that way because the chief writer of the band was more of a pop guy, pop metal and pop music guy. So he wanted stuff that sounded more like, I guess, top 40 in a sense, that might break through, so to speak. And that's what happened. We ended up breaking into the top 40 with our ballad, Honestly. So there you go. I mean.
Well, right, because this is during the time of the power ballad. And I say again that this was a creation of corporate rock in a way that was prevalent at the time. They had adapted the original, you know, L.A. scene kind of sounding stuff and a little bit of the East Coast, but not much, believe me, you know, into the genre. And it sort of packaged it in a way to me that was meant to be sold to teenage girls, again, I say, because what they did is they created a semi-feminine image out of these male rockers, okay? They had big hair. They had hairspray. You know, they wore makeup, the Poisons of the world, so on and so forth, right? Definitely a totally different lyrical class. But what I'm saying is that to me, that's the way I saw it. And it was like they're hijacking my music and they're selling it to little girls so that they're not as threatened by the manly aspects of, you know, the likes of a Tony Iommi, the likes of a Lemmy Kilmister, the likes of, you know, and despite Ozzy and all his antics, you know, definitely Ozzy was not a pretty man. You know what I'm saying? But a lot of these guys that came out, and again, I don't want to go naming the names of the people that I think were extremely talentless that were just kind of pushed out there into the genre. But the fact is, we know who we're talking about here. There were people that had very little substance to their music, et cetera, that were just sold based on the image. And again, I say I unfairly placed Stryper right in there because it was emerging at exactly that time when the power ballad was one of the hooks for commercializing the music, right?
Well, yeah, of course. And all, it was all about numbers. They wanted – back then you sold albums, vinyl records, and the more you sold, the better obviously you supplied, you know, money to the record labels and whatnot, you know. So that's really what that was all about. And, you know, now that you're talking about this and I'm just kind of twisting it around in my brain a little bit, and because I do think about stuff and wonder, I haven't become a vegetable yet. You know, I think about it and I thought while you're talking about that, I'm thinking, well, gee, you know, it is funny that, you know, there were a lot of homely guys doing the heaviest and thrashiest metal, and there were a lot of like very pretty guys doing the pop metal kind of after the girl kind of vibe, and maybe that was the whole dynamic. You know, the whole dynamic was, you know, that side of it was going to go that direction just because of those guys looking like they did. I never thought I was that great looking, but obviously, you couldn't tell whether Robert Sweet was a guy or a girl just because he looked so angelic, you know, back in the day with his Farrah Fawcett hair and his deep blue eyes. I mean, so what else are they going to do with Robert Sweet? Right? I mean, doesn't that make sense? Right?
No, I'm laughing because I didn't expect you to say that. But Robert Sweet is, again, one of those, you know, very sort of – look, I'm not into guys, but I'm saying an attractive dude you know, and also non-threatening. Actually, Oz, you're one of the more threatening members of Stryper.
You're not the first person to have said that. Trust me. Yes. I could have probably been in a metal band, a dark metal band, and it would have worked for me. So,
oh yeah, especially with the way you look now, I could definitely see you and I hanging out. You know, and trying to put a band together. But anyway, point is that it was kind of fascinating to see that happen. And, you know, the ebbs and flows of the music business are one thing. But again, I say it's really remarkable that that you guys stuck to a principle at the same time. So there was the marketing interest, and, you know, obviously the, at the time, selling more to the girls wasn't just about a gender issue. Female rock fans bought more merchandise, okay? They bought more rock, you know, tickets actually than guy rock fans did, to be honest with you. The guys were good for buying t-shirts, sure. But at that time, I mean, they marketed Stryper everything. They marketed, you know, Bon Jovi everything. They marketed, I mean, you name it, they made it, right? I mean, there was underwear even at certain points. I don't know if Stryper ever got into the underwear business, but a lot of the, but you know, I'm telling the truth, that's why you're laughing, that they sold panties with bands' logos on them to the girls. I mean, true, right?
Well, we didn't get into the underwear until now. And so,
oh,
you
cool.
know, we're selling. I'm serious, though. We're selling their Stryper socks that they're selling at the.
Oh, a huge store at Stryper.com, by the way. There is a pretty extensive store and a very cool bio on you, which I was debating about whether I should read it and all that. And I said, no, I'm going to have the honest conversation with Oz tonight. And
yeah.
We're going to dispense with that. If you want to learn about Oz Fox, though, go to Stryper.com, click on the band, and go to the Oz Fox link, okay, which has a nice rotating picture of him holding his guitars, one of them being the black and yellow guitar that you saw pictured in tonight's promotional meme for the show and all that. But Oz is an interesting guy, and I wanted to point out something else. When you talked about Tony Iommi and being a riff master and this kind of thing, I mean, you also watched, you know, that short time period where Randy Rhoads was with Ozzy Osbourne, and I'll bet that that was impressive to you as well, because I see in your style, you know, definitely a blues influence, okay, but also some of that later technical stuff that really Randy kind of pioneered when it came to this genre of music in his very short-lived career with Ozzy, and not so much with Quiet Riot, because that was kind of a – I don't know what to call that. But the thing is, when he was with Ozzy, he sort of pioneered this melodic extra sensibility, kind of a sophistication to the music. And actually, I can see how you might have been a Randy Rhoads fan as well.
Absolutely. I was absolutely a Randy Rhoads fan. Loved Randy's playing, loved his style, loved his sound. He had a unique tone that was just huge. He filled up the room with guitar. And that's really, when you're listening to Ozzy back in the day, when you heard Ozzy play live with Randy, it was all about Randy's guitar. Because that's what you had. You had just it was like a jet engine. That tone filled the whole room. He didn't need a keyboard player. It was all about that huge guitar tone that Randy had a chorus on, and it just rang like it was insane. It was amazing. So that whole thing really was like another, I guess, icon to gravitate to, was that whole Randy sound and style, and also the riffs. I mean, my gosh. The riffs Randy came up with were just as incredible, if not even just like a morphed and new version of whatever Tony Iommi was doing, because he kept that kind of an evil sound to it, which was really, really cool, you know. And I think probably had a lot to do with him being with Ozzy, and, you know, it probably influenced him in that sense, you know, knowing he was from Black Sabbath. And you know, because that happens to people. I mean, artists, all of a sudden you're getting it with a certain crowd, and you go, oh, man, I'm going to write this way, and you do it, you know.
Right.
So yes, Randy was a huge impact on me and many of my friends, including Mr. Michael Sweet, who is an amazing guitar player himself. So there you go, you know.
No, and I hear you there, and I know I'm sticking to the Ozzy timeline here. I mean, of course, after that, he goes to Brad Gillis, Jake E. Lee. All right, fine. But later on, he winds up with a guy from my neck of the woods once again. Zakk Wylde also forged in the same music scene that I was. He was with a band called Zyrus before he got the job with Ozzy, but a couple years older than me only. The fact is that when Zakk comes in, then you've got the false harmonics being added and sort of an amalgamation of all that coming together, especially if you take a look at, you know, Black Label Society now, which, again, lyrical content aside, you've got to appreciate the fullness of the sound, the wide spectrum. And see, that's the character. The reason why I'm mentioning this and making these comparisons is because these are guys that I have admired always. Right. And I'm pointing to the parallel with you where I can absolutely put you into the same category. All right. Because I hear the same type of evolution in what you're doing. Now, some things come through a little more on side projects you do. But but, you know, because Striper is what Striper is. But I do want to focus on Striper because, again, it's extremely fascinating to me that, you know, you have the music. The mechanics of the music, let's just say, for the average listener out there, it's really the soul of the music. It's the thing that actually speaks to you. I mean, when you decide to create these things, when you accept the inspiration from the universe or from God or wherever it is that you believe it's coming from your life experiences, and you pour it into that sound, that's one thing. But then there's also the presentation of it, et cetera, et cetera. And I want to get into that and kind of get into your head a little bit about your part of this when it comes to Striper, which, again, is the pinnacle of the Christian rock genre in my estimation. There were other Christian rock bands that attempted to follow after Striper and couldn't hold a bucket of water to you. It's just the way that it was. And there were other attempts, you know, and there's been people in other genres who obviously Christian music goes across many different genres. But really, honestly, when it comes to Christian and rock and roll, in my estimation, you only got one name to work with, and that's the band you were in.
Well, that's a pretty big statement right there. And I appreciate that. I know that we did very well and better than most, but I have to say, in my opinion, there were some other bands that were in that same time period where when we started that were really amazing bands, and the only way you would know that is if you really got into their music and saw what it was all about. And one of them being the band Bloodgood from Seattle area. I, in 2006, was asked to join Bloodgood and do some dates with them and be in the band as a fifth member, I guess you can call it. And so I joined the band with Michael Sweet's blessing and started working with them. And to me, I mean, I Bloodgood had opened for Striper at times in the very beginning, but I never really got a chance to get into their music. I'd heard about them, heard that they were all around and doing a lot of great stuff. But then when I finally got in the band and started learning their songs and it was pretty amazing. I had no idea until when I got in the band how incredible songwriting, incredible players, everything, how that was with Bloodgood. And so there were other bands that were pretty good. They just didn't get quite the break that Striper got. And there were other bands there was a band called Holy Soldier that came out shortly after we had our success. And they ended up being kind of like a poster child for some Christian labels of that time. You know, obviously it wasn't as big as what happened with Striper. And so, you know, I like to think that we had a part in a lot of those guys, having the success that they did, and hopefully we helped in that sense, you know, 'cause it opened obviously the door for a lot of those guys to, to kind of go out and make their mark, so to speak. But you're right, none of them really got as big as Stryper, and, you know, it's just kind of the way it was. You know, we definitely were different in our own, way, and more people recognized it, I guess you could say. And so that's where we're at. I mean, you know, I don't necessarily call us better or worse or whatever. I just say, hey, we are all in this together and trying to make a statement, you know. So, and you know, going back to, you kind of talked about Stryper being this band amidst all these other groups that weren't, that were just pretty much portraying sex, drugs, rock and roll and whatnot. I mean, you know, we knew about all that. We knew that all that kind of stuff was going on in the scene, and it was like, to us, it wasn't really anything that we planned. We pretty much just, because we all had Christian backgrounds, it was like one of these things that we just thought, well, why not? There's nobody else doing it, and if we truly are believing in what we believe in, then we should be very successful in our own right, in our own sense, to do what we did, to start playing our music with Christian themes, and if there's going to be people that'll be inspired by it, then we're doing a good thing. That's really all that mattered to us in the early days. And in fact, we kind of were like thinking, well, it's probably not going to do well because nobody's going to, you know, accept us and whatnot. But we did get accepted. So that was, you know, it was kind of all over the place at that point. But it was exciting to see the lines of people that were coming to see us back in the early day when we were playing in rock clubs. And it was just amazing. It blew our minds to see places sell out sometimes twice in a night to come see us. Mm. It was mind blowing, you know, and it's just all, you know, as far as we were concerned, we were just doing what we were called to do. And, you know, we had no idea that it was going to explode like it did. So I don't know how to.
Well, right. And, you know, it's interesting to think about, you know, the club days of Stryper, because I've never really seen a great deal of focus ever put on that. You know, then again, I mean, I'm not extremely familiar with all the media that's been produced about the band, but I would say that the early days must have been interesting because you want to talk about the bottom feeders of society at that point. They were definitely involved in any club scene you guys could have interjected yourselves into. And I've often stated that, you know, the sex and drugs and debauchery that comes along with your musician card, even if you have local success, is one of those things that is incumbent, seemingly, upon any musician to at least explore. Okay, in some cases they destroy themselves even before their successes. But you know, and there's a lot of never was among the world of, you know, those that evolved into something else. Mm-hmm. But what's fascinating to me is at the time that you guys were emerging, it definitely didn't seem like it was going to work, because what was accessible at the time? Well, the general, you know, the bubblegum area of stuff was covered, sure, but there was also the grittier, nastier kind of side of things, right? And it was kind of interesting because there were underground successes like Venom and, you know, and various black metal bands that came out of Europe, seeming to seize upon, you know, satanic imagery, you know, occult imagery, things like this. And that seemed to be a formula for success on some level, right?
Right, right.
And, you know, when I talked to you about this in the hotel, and I'm going to disclose, you know, I talked to you about this in a hotel room recently. I woke you up. But, you know, sorry about that. Again, you were really cool about it, though. I appreciate that. But, you know, we started talking about this, and one of the first things that you jumped to, which I found odd, was a thought about Motley Crue, right? Now, Motley Crue to me was sort of, you know, interesting in a musical sense, because of the guitar playing of Mick Mars once again, you know, and the writing style of Nikki Sixx. I think it was, it created a unique combination. And so they were one of a kind in a sense, but once again, they represented a grittier sort of glam side of things to me. Didn't seem all that threatening, except that they had a pentacle, on their one album cover, you know, which is a circular star with, you know, with the one point up, which a lot of people took as satanic imagery. And even you had sort of said, well, you know, that was kind of the antithesis of what you guys were doing, but I didn't see it that way. To me, that was just, you know, that was cartoonish. If you were to look at the real, you know, more, let's just say, dark side of things, you could have looked to bands like Slayer at the time. You could have looked at, you know, and I'm mentioning all the typical names, but there was a million of these guys out there that were utilizing the, you know, Hail Satan kind of imagery that was, you know, again, horror movie-esque, but still would have seemed rather threatening to people that would embrace Stryper's brand of music, lyrical content, etc. You know, and so that was an odd backdrop to come through regarding being associated with this musical genre. And I'm wondering, you know, from an internal standpoint for you personally, what was that like?
Well, okay. I mean, I obviously at the time, to me, all that mattered was that I was in a band and we were playing, and you know, we were doing something good with our music, inspiring people. So the whole thing about other bands, you know, obviously there was always an opinion about what they did and how they did it, but it didn't matter to me. I just kind of thought, well, we're doing this and people are digging it, so let's just keep pushing forward, and we'll keep you know. We'll just keep letting people hear what we have to say, and if that countered whatever anyone else was, you know, involved in, or imagery, or anthemy, whatever anthem of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. If that countered that, then fine. You know, I mean, everything has its place in life. There's always good. There's always evil. There's always, you know, somewhere in between. And I guess because. I guess because of that whole thing of the satanic imagery. In fact, that's really what I think Robert Sweet was the one who basically was against the satanic imagery. He was the one that made the biggest deal about saying, he would say stuff like, man, why do these guys have to use all this satanic imagery and using pentagrams and, you know, goat heads and all that stuff. It just bothered him so much, he wanted to do the opposite. And that's when he started bringing out 777 signs. Even before the band was called Stryper, he was doing that. And that whole 777 thing, it in the Bible, when you're reading your Bible, if you understand numerology of the Bible, the number 7 actually represents perfection. And there's like all these different meanings to numbers in when you kind of really get into some serious, you know, thoughts of and theology and stuff. But like for instance, it talks about how God hates 7 things. There's 7 things that he really hates, and it's really kind of weird stuff. But that was one of the things that Robert was, you know, trying to convey, was that he was not for satanic imagery. He was for God imagery. And So that was part of what started that whole trend of us moving into that direction. So
in a way, that kind of inspired you guys to push even harder in that direction, the fact that that was there, maybe through Rob's vision, but
yeah.
But definitely was part of the inspiration for pushing even more that particular idea forward. And of course, the number 7 is represented throughout the, I mean, I'm not a Christian, but I've studied the Bible. You've got 7 days, you've got 7 heads on the beast. So from one end of the Bible to the other, the number 7 is prominent throughout the theme, right?
But you know what? Really? It doesn't matter.
Okay.
I mean, in my opinion, you know, I don't go around looking for sevens everywhere. There's people that actually do that. There's people that go, oh, number seven. Oh, there's three sevens. Oh, my God, that means something. It don't mean nothing to me. As far as I'm concerned, it could say floor 13, and I'll go up and get my food if that's where it's at. You know what I'm saying?
Gotcha.
So I don't care about that stuff. It doesn't bother. Everybody has their own opinion about that. Me, I think it's silly. You know, it's just whatever. You're either going to love people and be a godly person, or you're going to not love people and be a wicked person, right?
So, yeah, exactly. You know, like Bill Hicks said, you're either going to choose love or fear, you know, and that's really the only two things there are, because fear, of course, leads to hate, leads to anger, leads to everything else. Yeah. And you know what love leads to? Love leads to creation. Love leads to more love, in fact. So, yeah,
love
I absolutely
sacrifice. Yeah.
And that's, well, that's part of it, isn't it? Because you give. You know, giving is loving. It's the same thing, right?
Exactly.
And when you choose to give a gift, and this was you guys coming together and giving this gift via your talents through your music, this is what it represented to you. And still to this day, there's little, you know, there's numeric images in the Striper stuff. Even if you go to the website today, you'll see that embedded in the logo is like Isaiah, you know, a line from Isaiah in the Bible is represented in the logo, kind of, if you didn't see that. A few other things that are kind of put there subliminally, let's just say. There's imagery built into things, right? I mean, well, you know this.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, everything – in fact, some people like to read into everything that we've got, and they turn it into something that it's not. And, you know, I mean, we have the Isaiah 53:5 on there. That was something that we decided to attach to the logo later on. And then, of course, Robert came up with an acronym for the word, for the name, which that came later before we came up with the name. The name Striper, we had to come up with something, cause the band was called Rox Regime. R-O-X-X Regime.
Oh, thank God you changed that.
yeah, that's what it was called. And then when we got signed to Enigma Records, they didn't like the name. They said, no, you got to come up with something simple. And then we ended up coming up with Striper, with spelled with a Y, so it would rhyme with hyper. And
now, that's pretty funny. Yeah. That's the reasoning behind that.
But there was all kinds of – we had already been striping up all the gear and guitars and striped outfits before it was called Striper, during the Rox Regime days. That's when it was doing that. And that was before I was even in the band, you know, and, you know, it didn't really, it's just my opinion, but I mean, I was in the band during the Rox Regime days for one show in Pasadena, California at a place called Pookie's, and with, the bass player that was in Rox Regime, at the time. And then when I joined the band, I guess they had kicked out the guitar player from Rox Regime, and the bass player was friends with him, and he ended up getting upset. We played one show, and then he quit. And so then it was from there we started the search for other bass players. And then, of course, time went on, and then we got signed. And when we got signed, we had to change the name. You know, Tim came into the band shortly before we got signed, and then the band started as Striper right there. You know, so obviously something to be said about the four of us being the guys that had the chemistry and created what you know as Striper today.
Yeah. Well, and you know what occurs to me here is, and I've heard this question asked, and I don't know if it's ever been properly answered, but is there some sort of meaning to the black and yellow stripes?
No, not necessarily. I mean, in the beginning, it just, I think Robert painted his drums yellow and black, different, like, yellow and black shapes, because he liked the contrast of it. And then eventually it went to stripes. And then from his drum set being striped, it went into the guitars and the amps and everything else. So it wasn't really any, it was just more of a gimmick than anything else. Didn't mean anything. So at this point, you know, I think when people ask, somebody might, I think I've heard Robert say, well, it's kind of like cautioning people to, you know, you make up stuff as you go, you know.
Well, yeah, that's funny. I mean, I've heard, you know, speaking of Oz, because, you know, your name Oz, speaking of Ozzy Osbourne, I've heard him give several explanations for lyrics that I know factually he didn't even write. So it's, you know,
yeah.
It's interesting. You get asked the question enough times, after a while, you decide you need to give him an answer.
Speaking of Ozzy, okay, you know, our new album, Fallen, we did a cover of After Forever. I don't know if you knew that or not.
No, I was just looking at the new album, Fallen, yeah. Actually, which is on the front of the Stryper website I was talking about before. And I was thinking to myself, it's funny because I had a song exactly titled Fallen many years ago. Definitely wouldn't have contained the same lyrical content you guys are going to put out there. But After Forever is an interesting track for you guys to choose.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
it really is.
And what the great thing about it is Michael kind of let me go on that one because he knew I was a huge Black Sabbath fanatic when I was younger. And, of course, After Forever, I learned note for note all the stuff, you know, I needed to make it sound pretty close to the original. And so that song is pretty cool to listen to myself. I like listening to myself play it with the guys. And then – you know, just kind of showing off how I kind of had all that Iommi influence, you know.
Hey, and you'd have to actually carry those chops to be able to do that song respectably, because quite honestly, that's one of those songs I've heard other bands try to cover, and it's usually a disaster, to be honest with you. But I think you might actually be able to pull it off because of the level of finesse that you have. And I'm not kissing up to you, by the way. I mean, believe it or not, I would tell you. I'm enough of a jerk that I would tell you, listen, I don't know if that was a good idea there, Oz.
I'm an artist, okay? So you can critique me all you want. I'm just going to be like, okay, that's cool. It's your opinion, you know?
Well, and let's be honest here. Now this is something that has nothing to do with being a Christian rocker or anything else. But let's be honest to people. If you're not a musician, you may not know this. Musicians are the harshest, nastiest critics of other musicians on earth. We love each other. We hate each other. We steal from each other. This is the truth about musicians. Are you going to argue with me, Oz?
No, I'm not going to argue. You're absolutely right on that.
So, you know, like we could have visceral hatred. Like you could come to our house and shoot our dog, but we're going to hate the guitarist who did something awful to a song we loved more than that guy who just showed up and shot our dog, you know. you know, I'm not making things up, though. I mean,
no,
it's the truth,
no.
Right?
Totally, I know what you mean.
You know, like I'm extremely hypercritical of bass players because I played bass. I'm extremely hypercritical of vocalists because before my throat got damaged, I was a vocalist. You know, and believe me, when I hear bad covers of songs, I mean, it makes me absolutely wretch. But honestly, I'm looking forward to hearing what you did with After Forever because it's difficult to pull off, to be honest with you. I used to do Into the Void as a cover. Right. But that to me has a positive message. A lot of people don't see it that way, but it has a positive message that, you know, if you latch on to worldly things, you're looking for destruction, you know, and at the end of the day, you need to lead those who wish to follow evil to their evil because you're not going to be able to change them necessarily. That to me is a positive message to separate yourself from the evil of the world and to not embrace the destructive power of nuclear war. But After Forever is a different kind of track. I mean, I'm really surprised that would be the tune you would choose because there's a bunch of interesting Black Sabbath songs that are not satanic, folks. Not really. Sometimes containing satanic imagery, but generally to me it seemed more like a warning about playing with black magic, about, you know, toying with the evil ones or the evil in the world. That's what Black Sabbath represented to me. And do you see it that way, or do you see it as Black Sabbath was kind of evil and it's one of your guilty pleasures?
No, I mean, in my high school days, when I was a huge Black Sabbath fanatic, I actually did get into the whole I guess, wicked imagery of the whole Black Sabbath kind of thing. And I was spending a lot of time coming up with these ideas for a band that would take it even farther. And I wanted to have this satanic band and like reenact human sacrifices and do all this crazy stuff with, you know, wicked sounding music. So I'm not blaming that on Black Sabbath, but I'm just saying I was, because of this whole overtone of what it was, I did want to be more of that and be more extreme of it. And it influenced me in my younger years to want to do that, which, interestingly enough, I ended up being in a Christian band. So,
well, and that's the funny part, right? Because, you know, look, you can be a different person when you're younger. That's for sure. And some of those things, you know, they do, excuse me to use a Star Wars reference here, but, you know, forever does it dominate your destiny in a way, but it doesn't have to be a negative, right?
Right.
You could take it and rebel against it. And that to me, again, is what's most fascinating about Stryper, is that this is one of the exemplars of being rebellious, because in the face of, you know, you might have been able to seize upon more success had you embraced the dark side, if you will, at the time, right? But that isn't what you guys did. You actually wanted to go out and look, we're going to do this our way. And still you got signed. Still you got out there. And, you know, look, again, I'm not a big fan of the power ballad, all right? Because, again, what did that represent to me?
You know? I get it.
Because think about it. I mean, if you think about being a big fan of Black Sabbath, right? And so we go into like 70s music, you know, you definitely were not thrilled with the disco genre, even though the Bee Gees were a fairly talented group. You know, you would have said, geez, I don't want, oh, God, I don't want to hear this crap, you know, because this is like the antithesis to my music. Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, my whole thing when it comes to that kind of thing. I had uncles on my mom's side of the family that were in rock bands, and they were doing stuff like Cream and Deep Purple all that kind of stuff. So, that's where it kind of went for me. I was like into that rock sound, and kind of grew up listening to it, And then, obviously, when I started learning to play guitar, I was gravitating towards that. And, you know, so.
It, again, still with the blues influence,
right,
which can still be heard in your playing today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, go ahead. But
when I was 6 years old, it was different. When I was 6 years old in 1965, My mother was listening to I was 6 years old in 67. That's when I was 6 years. Anyway, sorry.
Okay.
My mother was listening to all kinds of stuff. She was listening to Beatles, listening to Motown, listening to like stuff like Barbra Streisand and Frank Sinatra and all that. So she had a huge collection of vinyl records that she put on those old, you know, turntables that would drop the record down and play.
Oh,
you
nice.
Know, and all that kind of stuff. So that's what she would do when she'd clean the house. So being a kid, that's all I had to listen to was her playing music and blasting it through the house. And one of the albums that really just got me going when I was a kid was an album by Buck Owens called Open Up Your Heart. Buck Owens is known for being out of the box country guy back in the 60s, and he brought in the chicken picking guitar and made it what it is. And so that's what inspired me when I was a kid to want to even learn how to play guitar, was because of Buck Owens and his sound. you know, so go figure, you know.
Well, yeah, and then when you add in the overtones of Motown emerging at that time,
right.
And stuff like that, I mean, there was a lot of texture to music that was presented on those fairly shallow-sounding vinyl representations of it, you know, at the time. I mean, even the more minimalist Beatles stuff that was then transforming into something else in the later 60s and the early 70s. And then the emergence of the heavy rock stuff. See, for me, my mom was the heavy rock person. My dad was the Motown person. You know, so I got that same sort of texture, just I got it in the 1970s.
Right.
You know, it's fascinating how, like, your childhood impressions of music, again, you know, forever dominating your destiny, always seem to play a role in your interpretations of the art form later. And I think it's absolutely well represented by the way you play. Now you've got me totally locked on this idea, I've got to hear After Forever by Stryper, which I'm telling you, because I'm a serious connoisseur of that kind of thing. Like, I was disappointed with half of what they did with the Black Sabbath tribute records, because they were just, some of it was just terrible, you know, I thought. I mean, the guy from Ministry, dear Lord, I can't remember his name at all, but I'll think of it in a moment. He turned around and did a version of Supernaut that I thought was absolutely awful, you know. And meanwhile, this guy, you know, did NWO and Jesus Built My Hot Rod and all that kind of stuff, which I thought was very cool. You know, but then again, when he tries to do a Black Sabbath song, totally destroys it, in my estimation.
Yeah.
Interesting cut from one of those things is a band called Godspeed, again, coming out of the same musical forge that I came from. The band Godspeed was backing up Bruce Dickinson on one of the tracks. I can't remember which one they covered now, but it wasn't all that good. You know, Les Claypool turns around, does NIB, and, you know, what are you going to do? Les Claypool's a freak of nature when it comes to the bass. So, you know, but it's kind of weird to watch what happens when people try to do their homage to some other musicians. And I'm willing to bet that some of the riffs that you've written over the years have their foundation in some earlier music, too. Although, you know, like you said, you're not like the key guy when it comes to certain writing, but I know that that some of your own personal influence, based on the conversation we've had, is felt in the music. I wonder if you could point to a track where you're particularly happy with the way it turned out, and like you can experience your own influence coming back at you from the speakers. How about that?
Mm. Not necessarily with Stryper. I mean, because I think if there was anything that I wrote that in Stryper that had any kind of a metal influence, it was on the album "To Hell with the Devil," a song called "The Way," and that basically was my contribution to the album and trying to make it sound heavy, so to speak, and it definitely influenced by Iron Maiden, I guess you could say. Maybe not necessarily I didn't necessarily copy any riffs, came up with my own thing, but definitely had some hints of some Maidenish sounding stuff, maybe some Randyish kind of stuff in it, in that song, and it is one of the more popular Stryper songs, and has been for years, which is just great, you know, it's awesome. If you listen to, I was in a band project with Tim Gaines in the 90s called Sin Dizzy, and you definitely can hear some Sabbath influence in that, because kind of the way I went down the path of just trying to figure out what I could do with tones and melodies and stuff. I went more in a darker direction with it. But I was also at the time into Stone Temple Pilots at the time. So I kind of tried to mimic that vibe as well. So when you hear Sin Dizzy album, which is still available, by the way. You can get it online, but you know, it has all of that overtone in it. You just can't, you really can't. And then I'm the singer of the band, so you're hearing my vocal influence with all of that as well. So interesting, right. Interesting stuff. Yeah.
No, definitely. And I'll tell you what, my guest tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is Oz Fox, the guitarist from the band Striper. And we've gone through quite a bit of discussion so far on the Ocelli Effect, but in the next hour, I'm going to get a little more personal with Oz and get a little more inside of his head. And we're going to do something here that I think he hasn't done before. And we'll see how it goes. But anyway, I hope you guys stay tuned because this conversation will get more interesting. And who knows, if we have time, we'll even try and take some phone calls from you guys at 218-339-8525. So stay tuned to American Freedom Radio and the Ocelli Effect with my special guest, Oz Fox. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the world's meeting place. American.
It's practically narcotic.
Freedom.
Oh, yes, I like very much.
Radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
Yo, what's up? Check this out.
The voice of the revolution. American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.
People of Dumb. You can say what you want about this country, and I love this place. I love the freedoms we used to have. I love it. I love that. You know? I love it when it didn't take catastrophe to get us to care for one another. I love the fact that we're on camera all the time from all angles. But you know what? You can say what you want about America. And I say, I love this place. I wouldn't have it any other way. Wouldn't live in any other time in history in any other place. But say what you want about America, land of the free, home of the brave. We got some dumbass people floating around this country. Yeah. And this ain't just ranting and raving. This ain't just blowing off steam. I got a little evidence to support my claim. It just seems to me that only a really low IQ population could have taken this beautiful continent, this magnificent American landscape that we inherited. Well, actually, we stole it from the Mexicans and the Indians, but hey, it was nice when we stole it. It looked pretty good. It was pristine. Paradise. Have you seen it lately? Have you taken a good look at it lately? It's embarrassing. Only a nation of unenlightened half-wits could have taken this beautiful place and turned it into what it is today, a shopping mall. A big shopping mall. You know that? That's all you got. That's all you've got here, folks. Mile after mile of mall after mall. Many, many malls. Major malls and mini malls. They put the mini malls in between the major malls. And in between the mini malls, they put the mini marts. And in between the mini marts, you got the car lots, gas stations, muffler shops, laundromats, cheap hotels, fast food joints, strip clubs, and dirty bookstores. America the Beautiful. One big transcontinental commercial cesspool. And how do the people feel about all this? How do the people feel about living in a coast-to-coast shopping mall? Well, they think it's just dandy.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFI wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules.
No rules.
No taboo topics.
No taboo topics.
No fear of doom.
No fear of doom.
We are.
We are.
American Freedom Radio.
American Freedom Radio.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of election, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day.
Everything we want to sit and write in our midst, but we don't really give a fuck, that's the twist. Once you fall into the trap, it's a bit. Somebody took a bullet for your right to exist. When they slide that by you, they give you a rival, a rifle, your G.I. Joe. Hold on to your Bible, it's about survival. That is what.
So the second hour begins here on the Ocelli Effect, broadcast live on American Freedom Radio at AmericanFreedomRadio.com, which is where the live show originates from. You are also equally welcome, no matter how it is you decided to encounter us on other networks, through the archives, YouTube, whatever it may be. Welcome to this show. My guest tonight is Oz Fox. He is the guitarist, or one of the guitarists, I should say, for the band Striper, but... I personally find him to be an extremely likable guy. We've had sort of an honest discussion, I think slightly unconventional thus far, and I had to confess at the beginning that, you know, I didn't always appreciate Striper so much, but I have grown to over the years, and due in no small part to his contribution to the music in my estimation, but maybe I'm overstating that, as Oz has so humbly said here tonight. But Striper is not a thing of the past. They are currently, okay, not today, but currently playing some tour dates. There's a new album, which we did discuss one of the tracks, which is a cover tune of a Black Sabbath song, After Forever, which I'm actually personally anxious to hear myself. In the new album Fallen, which you can find out about at Striper.com. But they're also touring, coming to the northeast of the United States very shortly, actually. Right, Oz?
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to be, it looks like we're going to be in Hampton Beach, New Hampshire, at a place called Wally's on the 21st of July. We're going to be in Connecticut at the Mohegan Sun Casino on July 23rd. We're going to be at Stage 48 in New York City. So the list goes on. You know, you can go to Striper.com and look up the tour dates, and you can see where we're going to be, and, you know, for sure, you know, if we're coming to your area, you know, it may be a good time to come see us. We're also going to be in starting in September. And we've been announcing to everybody that we're going to be starting a tour called the 30th anniversary of the release of To Hell with the Devil tour. And what we're going to do is we're going to get dressed up in the old costumes and play the whole album from start to finish.
Oh, well, look, that's cool, because that'll be like, you know, the blast from the past thing, which a lot of veteran rock artists have done in recent years, for sure. It'll be interesting to see Stryper do that. Of course, you and I kind of, you know, our private conversation, I was talking to you about what it's like to do this stuff, you know, a decade, 2 decades now, 3 decades later. It's definitely a different game.
I certainly am not in my 20s anymore, so it's not as easy to get out and travel as much as, you know, I used to. And back then it was a different world. Our guarantees were a lot bigger, so we could hire more people to handle everything for you. Now I got to carry my own stuff through airports, and it's just, it's such a pain. But
look, the landscape of the music business has changed, Oz. I mean, what can you do?
But I would rather do that than load trucks for a living. That's what I keep telling everybody when they complain. Would you rather be loading trucks for a living? No,
that's true. That would definitely be a rougher job. And look, if you're a musician and you are blessed to be able to make a living as a musician, you're going to take it, even if it's in the smallest place. You know, if you were just able to make a living playing at the corner bar, you'd probably rather do that than take on some job that is not part of your heart's desires, you know.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I'm not saying that you're going to wind up in a corner bar, Oz. I'm just saying that there are guys who, you know, have been successful and do wind up just, you know, being the local oddity at the cover, you know, being in a cover band locally or something. And
but
it's
all in how you look at it, though. I mean, because in my 60s, I'm not going to want to be traveling all over the place, working hard and carrying my gear through airports. I might want to play the local bar and just play some jazz, you know?
Well, see, now there's the thing. Maybe 10 years from now, we'll be talking about Oz Fox's new fusion project, you know, that'll feature God knows who, you know, I don't know, somebody who has come out of the hip-hop genre, let's just say, to join him. And who knows what you'll be doing by then, some new form of music, right? But
that's
no
right.
matter what, you're going to want to create something like that, and that's definitely preferable to any of this other, you know, possibilities about making a living. And just in fairness, by the way, not just in the Northeast will Stryper be, according to the website. They have dates coming up in Des Moines, in Arizona, in Florida, you know, in Oklahoma, Illinois, you know. So do check with Stryper.com for tour dates. I think that is the main hub to get that information. Right, Oz?
Exactly. Yeah.
And
that's where you need everything.
Absolutely. And of course, now, as Oz told us in the first hour, you might actually be able to get that Stryper underwear I was talking about. So that, too, along with all the that's actually a pretty cool T-shirt design up there, too, which, again, I never thought I would say in my lifetime that, you know, I would consider buying a Stryper T-shirt. But here I am saying I'm anxious to hear the new album and I want to get a T-shirt. So go ahead and check that stuff out at Stryper.com. But you know what? I'm not just here to talk about Stryper, Oz. I want to talk about you.
Okay.
All right. And here's where some guys get nervous, because, you know, it's easy to talk about the band and you know what the radio station guys want from you. In the old days, I don't know. Did you ever get interviewed by Ricky Rackman?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Him, I always found to be extremely disingenuous. Here I go again. All right. Being the critic, right? Ricky Rackman bothered me because everything was great. You know, everything was great, even though it clearly was awful. You know, he was just there to push whatever MTV was playing. So, you know, Headbangers Ball, also Stryper didn't belong on there in my estimation. But back to it. Right. You know, being interviewed by Ricky Rackman and this kind of thing, I mean, there was sort of a standard list of questions you always got. How did the band start? You know, who were your influences? And that was about the extent of the questioning most of the time. You know what I mean? But I actually want to get at the personal side of you a little bit and ask you about some of this stuff once again that we covered in the first hour. But I really want to take it to you personally. Okay, and I know that you're prepared for this because, again, we had a conversation ahead of time, which I almost never do. I almost never have a conversation to prepare somebody who hasn't been on the show before. But I thought it fair to do this with you because I knew I was going to go into some areas that, you know, might be a little touchy. So here's the thing. Now, we put it into our minds that you have guys who are legitimately Christians. This is not a gimmick. You know, there is a kind-hearted side to what it is you're doing. Once again, not fitting in the heavy metal genre, based on the, you know, the mythos of it. All right. Some of these guys are actually not quite as bad as they're portrayed on TV, right? But some of them are worse. Okay. And again, this is not about you, but now it is going to be about you. I said, and I mean it, that that really drugs and alcohol and various levels of destructive behavior are presented to you in an obligatory fashion when you have even the mildest level of success in the music business, okay? And I'm sure you don't disagree with that. That's like one of the things that comes along with it, you know?
Right. That's so, definitely what comes along with it, for sure.
You know, so being a Christian guy, a legitimately Christian guy, not somebody who's seizing upon it, you know, to try and get out of trouble in court or something like that, as others have done, and stuff like that, and not trying to make apologies to the public, but being a legitimately Christian guy, I mean, there must have been a temptation for you personally. Right along those lines, anything from the women to the drugs to the alcohol, which, you know, even me, I was only successful on a local level. I mean, alcohol was something that was just presented to me everywhere I went. You know, and things like that, along with other levels of, bad behavior are just offered to you as a musician. I mean, tell us a little bit about that. I mean, what did you go through? Did you ever get tempted? Did you ever kind of, I hate to use this phrase, but did you ever kind of fall from grace at all during the time that you were, you know, a big name, successful, you know, in that stratosphere where this is, you know, not only something that could be offered to you, but almost expected of you as a rock star?
Well, I can only speak for myself because I, you know,
obviously, I just want you to speak about you here. Yeah.
In my life, I've had many ups and downs. I've had many struggles of, many struggles with temptation and fallen by the wayside, so to speak. Anger issues. I had a lot of anger issues during my. First marriage, which probably led to a big reason why it didn't last. there was, you see, it's kind of funny with Christianity and the church, there's always this kind of a taboo about, obviously there's going to be a taboo about drugs and alcohol and you know, extramarital, whatever, and
infidelity or whatever. Yeah.
But then you'll find that in the church, which is really funny. Okay. The right. Taboo's there, but you'll find some of the biggest evangelists falling into that temptation, you know? And there's no difference between the drugs or cheating on your spouse or being an alcoholic. There's no difference when it comes to being addicted to pain medication. There's mm-hmm. no difference when it comes to gluttony. Okay. And somebody can't control their eating habits. So all of that just goes along with it. Just not some of it doesn't get talked about. You know, what about porn? You know, guys that are getting into porn that are evangelists and pastors and are going after, it happens to prostitutes. They get pastors coming to them, wanting to, you know, right. their services. It's all there and it's all about where a person's heart is. Okay. So when it comes to me, I mean, yes, back in the day, I've had my struggles, my struggles with alcohol, my struggles with women. I never had any intercourse with other women so to speak. I always thought that was crossing the line. But during the Against the Law period, I was in a backslidden. So that's what they call that, being a backslider, when you fall back into your old ways. I was backslidden at that time, and I flirted a lot, and there were some times when I acted inappropriately and had some, you know, at that point, it's funny because I never really had a lot of women throwing themselves at me during the 80s. Okay. I don't know what it was. I mean, during that whole time when we were in spandex and glam and makeup, I was not the guy who was getting, all of the female attention. It was mostly the other guys.
Right.
Okay. The other ones that got all that attention. And usually on my side were all the guys, you know, that were crossing their arms watching me play, and they were in leather and all that stuff. It's like I always got that kind of a thing. As soon as when we got into the Against the Law period, which was an album, Against the Law was an album we released in 1990, I started going towards that denim and leather look. I grew a beard. I let my hair grow really long and stopped using Aquanet and no more makeup. And it's funny, that was when I got – more women throwing themselves at me than ever. So on top of being backslidden at the time, that was happening. So that opened a door for me for temptation like you wouldn't believe. And so it was very hard to turn down a girl or a woman who wanted to, you know, wanted a kiss, you know. And but I think I went that far with it, and then I walked away from it. And I had enough morals in me to say, nah, okay, enough of that. Not that that's really a moral thing to do, but I mean, I had enough in me to say, no, okay, no more.
Well, you were able to draw a line at least.
Yes.
Which, you know, which again, the temptation to not draw a line, to absolutely leap over every single line was right there for you. And it wasn't unique to you, obviously. Like I said, I mean, anybody who has had a level of success in the music industry, at some point, if you maintain it for a little while, no matter who you are, you know, it comes. It just does.
And I'm telling you, man, that when they're dressed in their hot dresses and, you know, they're coming after you like that. And then on top of that, you add alcohol to the situation. Then you're gonna slip. That's all there is to it. And in my opinion, here's just me personally. In my opinion, for me, the reason why I was like that was because I really wasn't fully committed to my Christianity at that time. All the way through the 80s, from the beginning of Striper into the 90s, there was always this kind of a, I'm a Christian guy and I have faith and stuff, but I'm also a rock star, and I'm striving to be a rock star, and I want to be famous, and there was always that part of you that was half-hearted, so to speak, which if you let that happen in your life and you're a Christian, you're going to fall. You're asking for trouble. That's all there is to that. Okay. So it isn't – the idea about Christianity is you have to have full surrender to God and a relationship with God and be completely dedicated to him, because you're going to care more about what he thinks, and he sees everything you're doing because that's what we believe. He's omnipresent. And depending on how – much of that you believe is going to stop you from doing stuff like that. So,
well, and here's an interesting thing too, contemporaneous with that time period when you were, you know, rock star royalty in a way, you know, to me, what was even more rock star-ish was the behavior of, like, the Jimmy Swaggerts and Jim Bakers. You know, they were like rock stars, too, except that they were out there not preaching the word of God through rock music, but really, I mean, in Swaggert's case, literally preaching against it, despite the fact that he was Jerry Lee Lewis's cousin, right? Interesting dichotomy there, but But, you know, what did you think of when you saw that kind of stuff happening where it was like, well, gee, these, you know, alleged men of God, you know, and I'm saying that in a disparaging way on purpose, these alleged men of God, you know, are falling from grace. And here I am, a rock star, you know, yeah, I'm doing good works, but maybe it's a little more acceptable. For, I mean, did that kind of thought process enter into the equation?
No, seriously, I didn't think, give it that much thought.
Okay.
And it just was a time period for me and something that, you know, I had to deal with in my own life, in my own mind, in my own heart. You know, of course it was when somebody like Jimmy Swaggart falls after he's been ridiculing you and saying that you're wolves in sheep's clothing, you right. just kind of have an aha moment. So, you know, that's kind of like, well, okay, see, this is what happens to a person. But then, on the other hand, you know, we're friends with Jim and Tammy Baker, and when that whole thing went down, that was saddening because he wasn't a bad guy. He was a super nice sweetheart of a guy, and he embraced Stryper.
Yeah, but see, the truth is, though, no matter how much of a sweetheart somebody is, right, and no matter how much of a man of God they are, they always have to be mindful of the fact that they are still men, they are still vulnerable, right? So it doesn't matter if you're on stage with a guitar or you're on stage with a Bible, you have to be mindful of that. Isn't that right?
But at the time, you know, I had a lot more compassion for Jim Baker than I did for Jimmy Swagger. If you can get that.
Yeah, no, I can get that. No, okay. No worries there. I still laugh when I see the video for Miracle Man by Ozzy Osbourne, where he starts out with the whole, you know, I have sinned against you, and that whole, charade that went on TV after he got busted, you know, with the prostitute in the hotel room and all that kind of stuff. Totally bizarre situation. If people don't know about it, look it up. You know, and even today, you know, my viewpoint of these televangelists is extremely colored by that whole time period, to be honest with you. And it's kind of fascinating. But at the same time, and I'm not making an excuse for whatever it is you fell into. I mean, bluntly, I want to ask you, you know, did you ever get tempted or get into drugs?
No, actually, the drug thing that never happened with me. I actually, when I was like 15 or 16 years old, I attempted to join my buddies to get on a pot smoking binge, and found out that I have a nervous reaction to pot. So, that didn't work. I wasn't going down that path. Cocaine was, you know, too expensive. I didn't have the money for that. And I was too afraid of getting involved with any kind of shooting up kind of stuff. You know, it just seemed stupid to me. So the only thing I really did was drink, you know, and drank quite a bit in my younger years. And then I kind of stopped for a long time. I stopped drinking the day that the first album was released on Enigma Records, the Yellow and Black Attack album. I stopped at that point, and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to stop, I'm going to quit, and I did for a long time, until in the 90s when we did the Against the Law album. One day I had a beer for my birthday, and then it was over. I just started drinking at that point, you know? So
the
then
gates opened, yeah.
You're right. So that was – there was always that thing about alcohol that was taboo, and then then it came the point where after the Against the Law period, Stryper kind of ended all of that and tried to fix where we were at and get away from that whole thing again. But by that time, our record label went out of business. We were on Hollywood Records, which didn't do anything for us. And, you know, they didn't know what to do with us at the time. It was a brand new record label. And because of all of the bad things that happened with Enigma, with the Against the Law album, so many promises for that album happened, and then they didn't come through with the promises. And then next thing you know, when Hollywood Records basically tried to get us into all these other places, and everybody's like, we don't want to hear about Stryper, you know? And so that was kind of, you know, a weird situation, and in my opinion, a divine roadblock, because you know the kind of path we were going down at that time needed to be stopped.
So, sort of the lull in your career at that point, you would actually think of as a positive in hindsight, because yes, it's possible that you could have continued on a more destructive trajectory where it would have gone beyond alcohol and maybe a little bit across in the line physically with some women. Who knows where it might have gone had the success train continued to roll, right?
Right. Exactly.
I mean, and again, I'm asking you to talk about you personally. We're not casting any aspersions about any other member of the band. I'm just talking about you.
You know?
And of course, feel free to say, look, I don't want to talk about that or whatever.
I'm completely open. Everybody, this is a lot of my friends and some fans. This is not news. You know, new news. There's a lot of people that know about this stuff, and I've told everything. My wife knows everything about it. You know, and it's I don't have anything to hide. My ex-wife knows everything about it. You know, so by the way, my ex-wife and I are really good friends. By the way, we were married for 20 years, and it was ugly divorce. But then we all came to our senses, and because I have kids with her, we're on good terms. And you know, it's she's remarried, and you know.
Well, right there makes you a better man than me. I can't even talk to my first wife, but I can't do it. I try.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But anyway, so, you know, getting back to what we're saying here, I just think those are the kind of things that happened to me because I wasn't completely sold out for my faith. Okay. Mm. And so when that happens, the old you gets in the way, and you tend to go back to that. So now, years later, now that I look back on it, I'm 55 years old now, and I think about all of that, and I think about, you know, and when it wasn't until something happened in 1992 where I had an issue in my marriage and I instead of being angry and bitter and going away from God, I dove into my faith and dove into reading my Bible and dove into going to church and into Bible studies on the radio, because there was a station on the radio that played Bible studies all 24/7. It was in Southern California. It's a station called K-Wave. So I listened to studies. The Bible became a living book to me at that point. And I began to understand the heart of God more than I ever had. And I began to understand what it meant to completely dedicate my complete life and heart and soul to God. And so ever since then, I've kind of grabbed some freedom. I grabbed some freedom because I realized that I didn't have to be perfect. And I realized that not everybody's perfect, so I don't have to worry. I just have to worry about what God thinks of me. And I don't care what anyone else thinks. So that's kind of a path I got on, and I began to understand how much God really loved me and cared about me. And that helped me get through so many hard times. And the other thing I started thinking about, because in the Bible it talks about how if you're a believer and you're following Jesus Christ, right, you have a paradise you're going to be at. This is not our home. Our home is another place that we're all going to be going to after this life is over. And if you think about that place and that you're going to be there one day, it doesn't matter what happens on this earth. So I got into that. I really got into that whole concept, and it's changed my life. I've become more peaceful in my life because I don't have to worry about what's happening. At this point, I give everything and surrender every situation over to God, who, according to the Bible, created the universe, created everything, knows everything, and knows what your future is supposed to be. So when I do that and, you know, he's in control of my life, then I don't have to worry. You know, and so I walk through doors that open to me, and the ones that really are meant to be gone through and stayed, I'm supposed to stay through those doors. That's because God opens those doors. And that's what I believe. And so everything in my life has been that way since I started doing that. I met my second wife, who is an amazing woman, you know, and she loves me unconditionally. And the band got back together. You know, I never thought we would, but
right.
'Cause there was a lot of ugly water under the bridge, and it finally did happen. We got back together, and now we're doing very well. And I'm probably not as well as some of the other bands that, like, you know, there's a lot of older bands like Foreigner and Boston and all those kind of bands that are getting a lot of money still to this day for performances and all that stuff. We don't get nearly half of what those guys get, but we still are able to make a living at what we do, and that's amazing, you know.
And that at the end of the day is really what we all set out to do when we start, going into music anyway, is we all just really wanted to, at the bottom line, say, listen, if I can make a living doing this, you know, that's a whole lot better than anything else that could be provided to me as a possibility. You know, like you said,
yeah,
loading trucks is not what you wanted to do with your life.
Although I did that. I did do that.
There you go.
Yeah, I actually worked for a warehouse for Harman International, JBL Professional and Harman Kardon and all that stuff. And I worked for them for 10 years. and it was all about inventory and shipping out speakers to, you know, every music store in the world and Stereo Shop, Best Buy's, Circuit City when they were around, you know, all that stuff. I did that for 10 years. And, but I mean, God had another plan for me. He had a plan to put the band back together and get us back on track. And we're still doing it. All original members, by the way.
Yeah, which is amazing, because even Black Sabbath has a different drummer, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, what does that mean for me? I feel like it's just this path that I'm on, that God has me on, and I'm walking, and He's showing me which way to go, and when I see opportunities that are meant for good, I go through those doors and I look for whatever opportunity is there for me. And maybe there's not an opportunity, and I just kind of, okay. Well, at least I went in and checked, and now I've got to go somewhere else. And it just seems like God has this path for me, and I just keep walking down. And then when I do that, some amazing things happen. You know, it's hard to explain. The only way to explain it is you have to follow the same path to really see it happen.
Well, you know what the truth is, in my estimation, is that you know, a path is going to be provided for you. Now, you can either resist it or you can walk it, and it's a whole lot easier to walk willingly along it as opposed to resisting it, right?
Well, but then I'm not going to, to a point, that's true, but then there's like, what about the people who walk down the path of drug abuse? You know, I have to say that's not something God would want for their lives. You know, I think that creates peace and death. You know, I want to be on a road that's going to create life and encouragement and love, you know. So in my opinion, that's what's happening in my life now. And I'm being able to encourage so many people at this point in my life, and I feel good about where I'm at. I feel good about the band, and, you know, regardless of any, there still are ups and downs in the band. Trust me.
Of course.
But
musicians, again, you're going to have ups and downs, and we are a cantankerous lot.
but we can still do what we do and work through the problems and make great music and encourage people. And there's still a lot of people that are really into the band, and they're getting their kids into the band, you know. and it, I mean, amazing stuff's happening with that. But not only that, I mean, I live in Vegas now. I used to live in Southern California. I moved here after I married my wife, who works here. She has a nonprofit that helps women in sex trafficking escape.
Which, quite honestly, Oz, I told you this before the show, you know, when we talked privately, but truth is, I would love to do a show with either both of you or just her, talking about her work, and maybe, you know, for somebody who doesn't know, give them an idea of why that is, that her work is fascinating. I told you why I thought it was personally, but, you know, sort of explain to people, well, what nonprofit his wife does, what does she do?
Well, my wife's name is Annie Lobert. She has a nonprofit called Hookers for Jesus. She was a prostitute for 16 years, and she had a huge encounter with God and got away from it and healed from it. And now she's helping other women that want to escape. She's helping them get out of it. She has a home that she puts these women at and helps them in a way where she helps them by the way she helped herself get out, which was through God and being a follower of Christ. And she helps these women to get away from that life and change their life and change their mind and get their mind on things of God. And then she helps them get job training and hopefully they will go down a new path because of it all. And there's been some success with that. And I think it's really amazing, you know, and it's a tough road for her. Because, you know, when you're dealing with, women that have been prostituted and whatnot, it's very damaging in their minds are damaged.
Well, their minds are damaged. Their families are damaged. I mean, there is a lot to be said about the underground sex trade, let's just call it, you know, which sometimes has to do with trafficking, but sometimes is on a local level where they don't go anywhere. But, you know, there's a mind control aspect here where, you know, pimps and other people that are parasitic upon them, utilize them for their own purposes. You know, and I had a personal discussion with you about this to tell you why it is that I can relate to some of these aspects personally. Right. And, I would be even willing to discuss that with her at some point in a future show, obviously, because believe it or not, Oz, we're down to like the last 20 minutes here.
Yeah.
And, you know, time flew by. I hope you feel the same way, but I really don't feel as though I had enough time with you. And I would love to, do a show where we feature exactly her work. You know, if you come on with her too, that's great. If not, that's okay too, because I just think that that's a worthwhile thing to inform people about, that there are ways out, you know.
Yeah.
Even when I turn around and do certain shows about certain topics, people wonder why. I would much rather provide people with the hope for escape from any cycles of destruction that I can observe and am personally familiar with, you know. So I definitely see that as part of the mission statement for what it is I do on this show. So, you know, please put in a word with her that I would like to explore that with her.
But, absolutely.
Also, you know, I totally forgot. I got lost in the conversation with you, but I do have phone lines open, guys, at 218-339-8525. So if you want to join into the conversation, I should have announced it earlier in this hour, but 218-339-8525, and I have control of the switchboard, so I will add you straight into the conversation if you want to ask a question or make a comment about what I've discussed here tonight with Oz Fox. I'm very sure that Oz would love to hear from you, and I would too. As per usual, the rules are you are allowed to abuse the host, not the guest. So you'll get cut off if you do that to Oz. He's definitely been a cool guy, been very open, answered any question I've asked him, shared a part of his personal experience with us tonight, and definitely deserving of our respect. So keep that in mind if you do call in. All right, Oz, I know it sounds funny that I said all that, but I feel obliged to do so.
That's very, very nice of you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
That's great. You know, but this to me is interesting, too, because, you know, in your second marriage, you wind up with someone who, okay, you revealed that there's an experience in her life that caused her to be on a path that wasn't necessarily the most Christian at one time in her life. You've made admissions that you were backsliding at one point and, in fact, even had a bit more of an well, let's just say an evil inspiration earlier on in life, you know. So it's not necessarily that people begin life one way and that's the way they must end it or that's the way they must live it. I see your story and her story to be similar in that there is always the possibility of evolving into the light. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And I wonder if you see that correlation between the two of you, like maybe this is part of the reason why you were brought together even, that, you know, in one way, you know, you have a voice which is unique as a musician and all that, but she also has a mission. It seems like the two mesh together in a very cooperative sort of way. They don't have to go together. But it seems like they would reside in the same building, if you will, you know, in a spiritual sense. What do you think of that?
Well, yeah, I certainly can see a divine ordinance going on here between the two of us. I mean, it to me, she was my miracle, so to speak, to have. I wasn't planning on remarrying after my first marriage. I just didn't know if I would be able to ever find someone that would be not only able to handle me as a person, but deal with my life as a musician, because my first wife had a lot of issues about me being a musician, and I think in the beginning it was good for her, but then later on, because it's feast or famine, you know, she was not happy with our lifestyle and where what the income we had, and I get it, you know, I understand she you know, she had a tough time growing up and stuff, but
and there's something to be said for that in general, because when you're an artist of any kind, right, you know, you don't have the relationship that a lot of other guys do with their wives, where, you know, one of them becomes the breadwinner, so to speak, and you know, it's semi-reliable. I mean, nobody can rely on their job nowadays anyway, but truth is that, you know, if you were a factory worker, you know, your wife says, well, at least he'll always have a job doing something like that, and therefore, you know, there's sort of a financial stability in that. It kind of takes a certain breed of woman, in my estimation, to be able to tolerate you know, being married to a creative partner. That's an interesting aspect.
Not the only thing. I mean, being a musician, you're kind of also married to your music. I mean, I spent a lot of time working on music and practicing my craft, and then there's also the aspect of networking. And you know, if you're not in the scene and out, you know, mingling with other musicians, you don't get work. You know, that's just kind of the way it is. I now that I'm in Vegas, I made sure that I was in the scene so that everybody knew I was available to be available to sit in or to be a part of something that, you know, was a money making situation. And sure enough, that's what's happened. I've been
right. Like in Vegas, you could be part of a backup band for somebody else. I mean, you'd be willing to sit in on somebody else's performance, let's just say, because they need a guitarist, you know, their guy's not there. And a lot of acts wind up in Vegas. So there's live opportunities. There's the possibility of, say, being a paid player in a studio, you know, coming into gigs like that. And quite honestly, that is where a lot of somebody's living comes from. Is just simply being in the right place at the right time. You know, I was hanging out with that guy Oz Fox the other night. He's a guitar player, and he's exactly the kind of guy that we could fit into this situation. Right. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be a rock and roll thing. Somebody might say, you know, he's kind of a, maybe we could get him to do the acoustic blues part, you know, on this particular track or whatever, right?
Yeah, and the Motown thing comes to play because I'm really good at funk and playing all that stuff because of the influence there. I've got the vocal thing, you know, I can sing a lot of stuff and harmonize and beat perfect pitch, so to speak. So that's all part of what happens in this town, and that's what is everybody's looking for that. So I can have work here, you know. But if you're not out there, you know, on weekends, you know, and kind of mingling with people and showing people that you're around, you're not going to get the work. You're not going to think about you. So that's another aspect of my marriage is, you know, sometimes I'm out a lot of nights, you know, doing that.
Right. And she may or may not want to join you, right?
You know, because she works 10, 12 hours doing what she's doing, and she wants to come home and just relax. And there are nights when I sacrifice the going out thing so that I can spend time with her. You know, there's nights where I do that too.
Well, so. And you got to strike a balance too.
Exactly, you have to be balanced.
You can't ignore your wife for your craft, but you also can't ignore your craft for your wife.
But I believe me, not a lot of women would be able to tolerate that.
That's why I said it takes a special breed, though, right?
Yes.
You know, and this is why, you know, the hangers-on you see with a lot of rock stars, quite on. You see, here I am being critical again. The hangers-on you see with a lot of these rock star wives where they, you know, marry some model and then they're divorced a couple of years later. It's because no matter how pretty she is and no matter how attractive he's supposed to be and how great it's supposed to be and all that stuff, the reality of trying to withstand. You know, and meanwhile, you know, your life could be even more hectic as a performing artist than it is. But even to withstand it on even the most basic level is really a difficult thing, and again takes a particular kind of temperament and a particular kind of agreement between two people to make something like that last, Oz. Right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. And you have to work. You have to work at your relationship. And spend time, you know, nurturing it, you know, and of course, I'm not perfect at that, you know. I still have a lot to learn on that one. But I do my best, and you know, sometimes the pressure's on, you know. You're caught between not turning down gigs so you're making some money, and you know, and trying to find the time to spend, you know, with your wife. That's definitely a balance and a hard one for musicians. But anyway, aside from that, hey, look, I definitely have been blessed with a gal that understands all of that herself, and she's easy on the eyes too. So that makes it a lot better for me in that area.
Right. Well, that helps. Now, I got a couple of questions that have come in by text. You mind taking a couple of?
No,
now,
sir, go ahead.
Okay. Here's the first one, and this is kind of I don't know, it's a little bit out of line for me. I wouldn't have asked this question, but since I can blame it on a listener, I will. Did you meet your wife when she was a prostitute or afterwards?
No, she had already left prostitution and already had a ministry, so to speak, that was reaching out to girls. And when I met her, I actually met her through a friend of hers that I met having dinner with another guy friend of mine, very well-known singer from a band called DC Talk. His name is Kevin Max. He was living here in Vegas at the time, and he and I were friends. Then we went out to dinner. He invited a gal that was my wife's best friend. And I got to know this girl, and she had a kind of like an outreach to strippers, because she was a former stripper. And so I got to know this girl, and it was like, wow, you know, it was pretty incredible that was happening. It kind of related to Striper being in the rock clubs and reaching out to people with our message and stuff. And she was going into strip clubs and helping women come, you know, to church and encouraging them or giving them gifts or whatever. And then I became MySpace friends. This was back when MySpace was the thing. I became MySpace friends with Heather, and that was her name, Heather Veach. And then one of her top friends was this gal named ex-hooker Annie Laubert. And so I clicked on Annie's MySpace page and read her testimony and was blown away at how dedicated she was, not only dedicated to God, but dedicated to her outreach and trying to help women get away from. So we became MySpace friends at that point, and I think she inquired with Heather about me because I let her know that I had met Heather, and Heather basically told her, oh, you got to meet this guy, you know, and so, you know, it kind of started there, and that was in 2007, and I finally met Annie in person in 2008, coming out to do cover gigs out here in the Vegas area, and then that was in February of 2008. In November, by November of 2008, we started dating, so, you know. At that point, and we were married in June of 2009, so it didn't take long for me to realize this was the girl.
Yeah, you decided right away, and I totally understand.
I just didn't want to let her go. I didn't want her to, you know.
didn't want her to wind up somewhere else. No, I hear that too. No, when you see something good, you say, you know, it's like anything. You say to yourself, you know, if I don't take up on this right now, somebody else will.
Too, when we first started going out, she's like, she showed me her, she showed me this ring. It was her chastity ring, I guess you call it, or something like that. Where she was like, look, I'm saving myself for what the person I marry. That's what she said to me, and I'm like, okay, that's all good. I'll take that.
Yeah, yeah, look, respect the situation, and then say, now, do I want to marry you?
The great thing about that is that, you know, when it doesn't matter what happened in her past, the great thing about becoming a believer in Christ is all things become new, you know, and her heart changed, her mindset changed, her life was dedicated to Jesus Christ, and that was what really, you know, really attracted me to her the most, was that dedication to Christ, and so to me, she wasn't a prostitute, she was a virgin. You know, so that put me on a whole other mindset about her, and it doesn't matter what. In fact, everything that happened to her in the past is just what helps her to do what she does now. You know.
Well, right. I mean, as much as you know, you're all for the idea of obviously extracting as many women as possible from this very destructive, you know, horrible trade, and I'm sure you absolutely agree with her work.
And you have to read her book. She has a book called Fallen. It's funny how that's.
Wait a minute now. There's a Striper album called Fallen now.
Yeah, no. No, actually, the book was first, and then Michael came up with the Fallen for the for the album.
Oh.
But actually, she was, her name in the days when she was prostituting was, her name was Fallon.
Ah, okay.
And that's how her name went, inspired the book. And Fallon was spelled F-A-L-L-E-N in her, when she was using it. Which kind of goes hand in hand with, you know.
Well, it goes along with the sentiment, and of course, this is all about you know, the process of transformation. After all, I say everything is work in progress, and let's stress the word work, because there's always changes that can be made if you are so inspired. You know, Oz, we're almost completely out of time. I forgot about the phones again, so I'm not going to take anybody on there, but. Bottom line here, you know, I kind of want to give you the floor and let you give closing thoughts to people. And thank you for taking this time with us tonight, because I think this has been a very interesting journey. You know, definitely not the whole story, but definitely a snapshot of what it's been like, you know, as a musician, as a man. A lot of different things were discussed here tonight, and I'm pretty satisfied with the way the interview went, and I actually hope that you and I will be able to sit down again and have an even more in-depth discussion. But You know, I want to thank you again for being on the Ocelli Effect and sort of give you the last word here to tell people what you would like them to take away from this discussion tonight, whatever that might be.
Well, you know, I'm sure everyone's conceptions or their ideas of what a Christian is are probably implanted in your mind from so many different things you've seen on TV or people that have you've encountered. I just have to say that, you know, reality is you're really not going to know what Christianity is about unless you yourself starts to experience it for yourself. And you know, I don't know what that is. I mean, you could be a Catholic, you could be a Mormon, you could be a born again, you could be a Muslim. Really what matters is Christ died and he came back to life again. And there's a reason why that happened. If you find out what that reason is and you start to understand why, it doesn't matter what all these other people have done or have affected you in whatever way. You'll at least understand the reasons. And that's my challenge to everybody, is to really look into that, you know, and see what it's all about. And I've dedicated my life, and it's been amazing, an amazing life.
Well, absolutely. And I, again, thank you for sharing it with us tonight. Oz Fox, guitarist from the band Striper. And I do advise you to go to striper.com, take a look at it, and look up Oz Fox, by the way, because he's got his own website where there is a banner for the Hookers for Jesus that his wife is involved in. I also advise you to take a look at that as well, because it is a worthwhile cause. The Ocelli Effect is done, and I will see you guys again on Monday. Stay tuned to American Freedom Radio, though. Oz, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure, my pleasure.
And everybody, stay tuned, have a good night, and we'll see you next week.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
We all know that they're not telling us the truth. So stand up for your rights, demand the real medicine, and your right to use it and grow it. This is Rick Simpson, and you're listening to American Freedom Radio.
Online, all the time, your gateway to the world.
AFR.
American Freedom Radio.
Give it to them.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the war in the Persian Gulf. You know my favorite part of that war? It's the first war we ever had that was on every channel plus cable. We like war. We're a warlike people. We like war because we're good at it. And you know why we're good at it? Because we get a lot of practice. This country's only 200 years old and already we've had 10 major wars. We average a major war every 20 years in this country. So we're good at it. And it's a good thing we are. We're not very good at anything else anymore. Huh? Can't build a decent car. Got no steel industry left. Can't educate our young people. Can't get health care to our old people. Now, you probably noticed I don't feel about that war the way we were told we were supposed to feel about that war, the way we were ordered and instructed by the United States government to feel about that war. You see, I tell you, my mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I don't just roll over when I'm told to. Sad to say, most Americans just roll over on command. Not me. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. Nothing. Zero. Nope. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country, who in the case of the Persian Gulf War were nothing more than unpaid employees of the Department of Defense, and who most of the time function as kind of an unofficial public relations agency for the United States government. So I don't listen to them. I don't get all choked up about yellow ribbons and American flags. I consider them to be symbols, and I leave symbols to the symbol-minded.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio and service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFI wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules. No rules. No taboo topics.
No taboo topics.
No fear of doom.
No fear of doom.
We are
American Freedom Radio.
American Freedom Radio.